So I hope you all gave a present and celebrated your mothers before you came over here this afternoon. Happy Mother's Day. The theme of our talk today is stumbling blocks, stepping stones. What are stumbling blocks for some or stepping stones for others? And that's what we're going to talk about today. And we welcome comments and feedback from these PowerPoints to UtahKrishnas@gmail.com. We have a membership class online with a PowerPoint, which you can access through our website at www.utahkrishnas.org. Everything's based on the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, the founder, Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. God's plans are for good, they're not for evil, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to find ourselves in negative situations. Just because you feel like you're walking righteously and you're walking in God consciousness doesn't mean that you're not going to meet opposition. Doesn't mean that there are not going to be stumbling blocks thrown before you in your path. But it does mean that everything will work out ultimately, and that you'll move, if you keep in faith, you'll move steadily, step by step, in the plan that God created for you. Doesn't mean you're going to understand everything that happens to you. Why did this friend betray me? Why did this company lay me off? Why didn't I get that promotion? Why weren't my prayers answered? We took a picture of this book here. A setback is a setup for a comeback. A book by Willie Jolie. A setback is a setup for a comeback. Sometimes life seems unfair. It seems like we get bad breaks. But that doesn't mean that it's not a part of Krishna's plan. Krishna uses the sun-drenched mountaintops. He uses the successes. He uses the victories. He uses the promotions. He uses the breakthroughs. He uses all those good things, but he also uses the things that we would consider bad as well. Disappointments, closed doors, betrayals, and persecution. These things are also part of his implements to move us towards his divine plan. Krishna wanted me to come to Utah. I didn't know this. In 1976, Krishna caused some disappointments to come in my and my wife's path. And little did we know it at the time, but the ultimate purpose was to go to Utah and spend some time, 28 years in Utah. Whether we'll spend another 28 years in Utah, I have no idea. I have no idea what God's plan is. But at the time, 1976, I was in Berkeley, California. We were inhabiting a former Mormon church, which had been bought just 5 blocks away from the University of California at Berkeley. And in the 3 years of my tenure, we'd gone from 20 devotees to 120 devotees. We'd bought a 150-acre farm in Mendocino County, 5 or 6 houses up and down the street to house the extra devotees. We were distributing $1 million worth of books every year. A huge Rath Yatra was held in Golden Gate Park, and the last year I organized it, we had 20,000 people. It was on the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle. And I remember I had a visit from one of the leaders of our movement, Hridayananda Das Goswami. And we went on a walk, and we walked up onto a hill, and we could see all of the Bay Area before me. And he said, "Charu," he said, "you dedicate your life to making San Francisco Bay Area Krishna conscious." And that sounded reasonable to me at the time, and I felt committed to just that very, very goal and ambition. But then after Prabhupada passed away, our spiritual master, in 1977, things were a little chaotic for a while. And one fellow was sent to be in charge of the Berkeley Temple, to be the guru. And this fellow had a reputation of being a troublemaker. He'd been a troublemaker in Berkeley. Actually, he'd been in Berkeley about 5 or 6 years earlier. And his habit was to loot. This is 30 years. This is ancient history. I don't want anyone to think that our society hasn't matured and gone beyond these incidences, but they're very instructive. He'd had a reputation of looting men and money in Berkeley 5 years before. After that, he went to England and he looted men and money. He looted men and money in Germany, and then he went to India and he looted men and money. And wherever he went, he would fight and cause trouble. So Prabhupada eventually sent him to Sri Lanka. He sent him to Sri Lanka. And he said, "Nobody will bother you in Sri Lanka." The subtext is, you won't bother anyone else in Sri Lanka either. But once that failsafe of Prabhupada was gone, some or other the GBC thought that they would send Hansa Dutta to Berkeley. And for 3 months, I tried to work with him and cooperate with him. And it just wasn't working. There were rumors behind my back, and I was being discredited. and spoken against, and he came as the guru, so he initiated everybody that I'd been working with and everybody who trusted me for the last 3 years. He initiated them within 24 hours and just sort of took the rug out from me, underneath my feet. And 3 months later, I finally couldn't stand it anymore. It was impossible to live in that environment. And so I said, I'm leaving. And he said, what took you so long? I said, what did you say? He said, before I got here, before I came here, I had already decided it was going to be you or me, him or me. So I'm surprised you lasted for 3 months. So at the time, I couldn't understand how all those gains in a major city in the United States could be reversed. And in fact, after I left, the men all went away, the money was all misspent, and Berkeley, even to this day, is just a shadow of what it was in what most people consider its heyday, 1975 to 1978. So at the time, I didn't understand it, I didn't like it, it didn't seem to make sense to me, but anyway, here I am. You know, this was my destiny, this was my path. Krishna eventually wanted me to go to Utah, so it ended up well, I think. If we have the right attitude, we'll think that nothing happens to me, but everything happens for me. Krishna would have not allowed it to happen unless he had a purpose for it. That person who hurt you, God could have stopped it. He could have kept it from happening, but since he didn't, we have to accept that this disappointment, this betrayal, this bad break, we may not like it, may be painful right now, but ultimately it's going to work. It's not going to work against me, it's going to work for me. This is Britta, and this was our yoga retreat. You see all the retreatees in the hot springs there, and in the foreground is Britta Stump. She has been listening to our podcast for some time now, and she and her husband's name is Adrian, and he has a bachelor's degree. He has very good grades, very good resume, and yet for the last 3 years, every year he submitted his resume and his application for graduate school, and it's been turned down for no reason whatsoever. He's eminently qualified, but every year for the last 3 years, his resume, his application to graduate school has been turned down, and they can't understand it. They can't understand why this is happening, not once, not twice, but 3 times. But she listens to the 5 steps for faith building. The 5 steps for faith building starts out with a dream that's given, that's implanted into you by God. You make a decision based on that dream, and then you have delays, and then you have difficulties, and then you have a dead end. So Britta was laughing during the yoga retreat. She says, before we started getting this knowledge from the Vedas, you know, we were just frustrated, and we were simmering, and we were thinking about the unfairness of it all. But since we've been listening to these talks, we just identify it. We're just in the difficulty delay stage. That's all there is to it. And it's just a matter of being persistent and not thinking that this is happening to us, but this is happening for our ultimate good. And right now they're thinking, maybe we should just go to a foreign country and teach English or do welfare work or join the Peace Corps or something like that. And I'm sure that 5 or 6 years down the road, they'll have decided that his being refused into graduate school 3 years in a row will have been part of God's divine plan. And that what he has in mind for them is a lot more fulfilling than what would have happened if Adrian had been accepted into graduate school. So whatever happens to you, even when the negatives happen and you have opposition, you have enemies, you have betrayals, stay on the high road. Here's a fellow who's being interviewed for a job, and the interviewee says, now for the last question, how do you get along with people? And if you look closely at the graph, you can see he's got a chip on his shoulder. So if you lose your job, don't go around with a chip on your shoulder. If someone lies about you and tells stories about you, it's okay. Don't waste time thinking about how to pay them back. Nothing happens to you unless it happens with God's permission. And when one door closes, it simply means that Krishna is preparing a bigger and a better door to open to you later on. But right now we have to pass the test, stay in faith, and let Krishna take us to a new level of our destiny. You may be familiar with the great epic Ramayana and all the negative things that happened to Lord Rama. Lord Rama was faultless. Nothing happened to him was a result of karma. He did not commit any sin, even within his mind, and yet on the eve that he was to have been coronated as the king of Ayodhya, he was banished to the forest by his stepmother Kaikeyi for 14 years. And throughout all of India, Kaikeyi is thought of as the big demon, as a big party spoiler, as a big envious personality. And Ram, he could have reacted, you know, just when the kingdom was so close he could taste it, when he was just going to be coronated over to rule over this vast, vast kingdom, he could have said, it's not fair, it's not right, I'm righteous, I don't deserve this. But actually, Ram knew that Kaikeyi would betray him. Ram is none other than Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he descended in his incarnation of Ram to kill the evil Ravana. Now, Ravana lived in the south of India, in Sri Lanka, and Ram, his kingdom was in the north. Had he been coronated in the kingdom of Ayodhya, he would have never confronted the evil demon Ravana, and he would have never come into that situation where he would have destroyed Ravana and made the world safe for piety and religiosity. So Ram, actually before he descended, he got together with Kaikeyi, the person who was going to descend as Kaikeyi, and he worked it all out in advance. He asked Kaikeyi, will you betray me? And she said, why me? You know, couldn't you pick someone else? Everyone's going to hate me. Everyone's going to think of me as a villainess, as a witch, as a demon. And he says, you're the best. You're the staunchest of my followers. And you can take it. You can take the censor. You can take the criticism. So I want you to chin up, and I want you to descend along with me. And when the time comes for me to be elevated to the throne, I want you to stop it. I want you to stop it. I want you to cause me to go into exile in the south so that I will confront Ravana and rid the world of his evil. So Ram didn't get a vision. He didn't get an omen. He didn't get a dream. It was his so-called enemy that took him to a higher level of destiny. And we need to recognize in our lives also that sometimes our divine path is chalked out not by, you know, voices from the sky and dreams and omens and things like that. More often than not, our courses in life are chalked. The way we turn left or right is determined more by those who oppose us than it is by favorable circumstances. So Kaikeyi, inimical apparently as she was, she played a key role in fulfilling Ram's destiny. This is called persecution for a purpose. She was used, she was instrumental to get Ram to his place of blessing, and had she not come against him, he would have stayed in his boat and missed the fullness of what was in store for him. Prabhupada, our own spiritual master, who was the founder of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which now has 400 branches all over the world, was betrayed, personally betrayed, 4 times. And if he had not been betrayed, not once or twice or 3 or 4 times, we wouldn't be here. Neither would there be hundreds and hundreds of temples all over the world where people can learn about God consciousness and purify their hearts by chanting the holy names of the Lord and ultimately go back home, back to Godhead. The betrayals didn't set him back, they set him up to found a worldwide spiritual movement. First of all, in his home, his wife sold, if you're a devotee, you know this story, that Prabhupada had his sets of scriptures there, which he referred to, and his wife was a pious lady, but not a devotee, and she one day needed some money for tea, and she sold Prabhupada's scriptures in order to get tea biscuits. And Prabhupada was at that age when his spiritual master, many years before, had asked him to go to the Western countries and preach Krishna consciousness. And so that was in Prabhupada's mind, but he had this attachment. Will my wife be all right? Will my wife be all right? Should I leave her now or should I wait and wait? And so he was just kind of putting it off. He came home one day, said, where's my Srimad Bhagavatam? And his wife said, I sold it for tea biscuits. And then Prabhupada said, you need to decide, tea or me? And then she set his course. If she had not said the next words, there might not be an International Society for Krishna Consciousness. When Prabhupada said, tea or me, she said jokingly, tea. And so he took that as a sign, that betrayal as a sign, to leave home. And had he not left home, nothing else would have happened. Then he worked on establishing a temple in India. And he went to Jhansi, and he got the use of a building there. He used it for a few years. He started his League of Devotees. He even had one initiated disciple. He had meetings. He had plans to expand and use the building. And then he was betrayed again by the landlord. who had a friend whose wife wanted to use it for a sewing factory. And so in order to establish a worldwide movement, he needed to leave India. And betrayal on the part of this landlord was a key factor in moving him along on his destiny. And then when he got to America, he was part of a spiritual movement called the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, which had 64 temples and hundreds of disciples throughout India. So he kept writing back. He was in America, but he was looking back at India, asking for help. Send some men, send some money, send some instruments, send this and send that. Introduce me to some wealthy men who can support. If we can buy a former church or something in New York, we'll have established a headquarters in the most important city in the world. And none of his god brothers, none of them would help him. The most he got was, I think, one madanga. One madanga. So he actually ultimately had to leave or separate himself from his own religious institution of which he was a part. And then he started looking at the Westerners. And he started concentrating and preaching to the Westerners and going out into the park in the Lower East Side of New York City and chanting on bongo drums and getting a bunch of Westerners to help him. And even then at this point, he was living, sharing room, living here and there, hand to mouth. Wherever anyone would let him stay one or two nights, he would go there, he would stay there. And then when he wore out his welcome, he would go somewhere else. And then going to the park and chanting. And there were a number of young people, musicians and artists in the Lower East Side of New York who had become interested in his teachings. And one day he was staying for some weeks actually with a boy named David. And David went out and he took LSD and he came back and he attacked Prabhupada with a knife in his apartment. Prabhupada had to leave all of his things behind. He went down the stairs, out into the street. He didn't know where to go. But then he remembered one Michael Grant, a musician who had been coming around to the park chanting fests. So he went to Michael Grant and he told him what happened. And Michael Grant said, "That's it. That's enough. We can't let you do this anymore. Put yourself in these perilous situations." He went around and all the young people who had been interested in Prabhupada, they took up a collection and they got him a rented storefront with an apartment across the courtyard. And that became the first temple of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And that storefront had been called before it became vacant and was leased. And the sign from the previous owner was still there, "Matchless Gifts." So if Prabhupada had not been betrayed four times, we wouldn't be here today. We wouldn't be here. So sometimes without betrayals, we miss the amazing future that God has in store for us. We may not like it, we may not understand it, but God is using these incidences to get us to where we want to be. And none of these people that betrayed Prabhupada were bad people. His wife wasn't a bad person. The landlord wasn't a bad person. His god brothers were not only not bad people, they were saintly people. They were saintly people. And the roommate, David, later on, Prabhupada made it up with him and forgave him and blessed him and all like that. So none of these were bad people, but they did what they did because God used them to move Prabhupada to a higher level of his destiny. And if we believe that our life is orchestrated by God, then sometimes when we get bumped out of something, we'll realize that God is calling us to a higher level of obedience, to get to a higher level of service. What's required is a higher level of obedience. And when the wrongs happen, when the negatives happen, when we're betrayed and stabbed in the back, we need to shake off those wrongs and keep a good attitude. We need to believe it's going to get better, even though your mind is telling you that it's never going to work out. Deep down inside, we have to believe that our life is divinely orchestrated. That these negatives, this opposition is not happening to me. It's happening for you. That person who interviewed for the job, who won't call you back, who hasn't called you back. The friend who ignored you, the co-worker who betrayed you. Don't sit around in self-pity. Shake the dust off your feet and move forward with your life. Don't consider it a setback. Consider it a setup. If Krishna wanted you to marry that person, if Krishna wanted you to have that promotion, if he wanted you to have that job, you would have. So quit sulking. Krishna has something better in store. Their rejection is going to lead to God's promotion. Let Krishna do something amazing in your life. These things don't happen to us, but they happen for us. You may not be able to understand it or see it now, but one day you will. Don't get upset because a friend betrayed you. Don't be bitter that your prayers didn't get answered the way you wanted. Don't have a chip on your shoulder because of a bad break. God would not have allowed these things unless He was going to use it to your advantage. Now, this is a story I heard about a preacher. It's the tray table story. He was in a little plane going somewhere remote to give a revival service. It's a little 12-seater plane. There was only one seat on either side of the aisle. And there was some associates there with him as well. And so everybody put down their tray tables and they put out their laptops and they started working. So the main preacher, he thought he'll just pull out his tray table and start going through his notes for the sermon that he was going to give when they landed. But the tray table was obstinate. The so-called tray table was stubborn, you see. So he shook it, he finagled with it, he jerked with it, he struggled with it. And some of his associates from across the aisle, they came. So pretty soon there were four or five guys pulling it this way and pulling it that way and pulling it this way. And at that point, the preacher happened to look up at the upper part of the fuselage, and there was a sign there that said, "Not a tray table. Emergency exit." He said, "Lord, thank you for not answering that prayer. Lord, thank you for not answering that prayer." Krishna has our best interest at heart. And you can just imagine how many times we're frustrated because it's not happening our way. It's not happening according to our timetable. And Krishna's up there with a big smile on his face thinking, "If you only knew what you were asking for, I love you way too much to answer most of your prayers." And when you know that life is divinely orchestrated, you don't get frustrated. You don't try to force things to happen. You trust God to do it His way. You don't get upset when someone does you wrong. You know God can even use your enemies to keep you moving forward. This is Gajendra. Gajendra on the land, he was an elephant. Nobody can defeat the elephant. It's not the lion who's the king of the jungle. It's the elephant. And Gajendra was the king of all the elephants, and he had as many she elephants with him. He was in the prime of his youth and strength, and he was taking a bath by the riverside. And as he was in the bath, a crocodile, an enemy, came and grabbed his leg and was pulling him further and further into the water. The struggle went on for days and days. Now on the land, the elephant cannot be defeated, but in the water, the crocodile is stronger. So after a while, the elephant's energy began to ebb and ebb and ebb and ebb and ebb. And all of his ego, all of his false pride, all of his false prestige, it began to evaporate along with his strength. And finally he realized that if I'm going to get out of this situation, I have to recognize my limitations. I have to call upon the Lord. And so he picked a lotus flower from the lake and he offered it. And he uttered some of those beautiful heartfelt prayers in the history of the universe. And this is one of the prayers that he uttered as narrated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. "Unalloyed devotees who have no desire other than to serve the Lord, worship Him in full surrender and always hear and chant about His activities, which are most wonderful and auspicious. Such devotees never ask the Lord for any benediction. I, however, am in danger. Thus I pray to you," the personality of Godhead. So this scene has become famous as Gajendra Moksha, the liberation of Gajendra. And he wouldn't have attained that liberation had not the enemy grabbed his foot and tried to kill him. So don't complain about your enemies. God can use your enemies to keep you going further when you would have given up. Sometimes your enemies do more to catapult you to success than do your friends. After the 14 years during which Ram was in exile, in which he defeated Ravana and all the forces of evil, he came back to Ayodhya, and one of the first things he did was he embraced Kaikeyi. He rewarded her. He showed gratitude to her, even though the whole world despised her and she was purportedly his enemy. He bowed down and he touched Kaikeyi's feet, without who his destiny would not have been fulfilled. Krishna, in his incarnation of Krishna, there was a poisonous multi-headed serpent named Kaliya. And he inhabited the waters of the Yamuna River, the place where Krishna had descended to exercise his pastimes with his friends. and the poisonous vapors from the Kaliya serpent and from the polluted river overcame all the eternal associates of the Lord, the cows and the cowherd boy, and they all fainted out and went into a coma. And eventually Krishna defeated Kaliya and banished him from the Yamuna River. But before he did it, he danced on his hoods. And on every single hood of Kaliya, there was the footprint of the Lord. And people, great sages and saints, what did Kaliya do to deserve this? All he did was he attacked Krishna, he tried to kill his friends. But when Krishna brings an enemy, either in our life or in his life, it is to a good purpose. And in this case, it was to show Krishna's power. There's a wonderful classical dance form. In fact, of all the different forms of Indian classical dance, this is the one that Westerners love the most because it involves spectacular footwork. It's called Kathak. The dancer will wear 6 or 8 pounds of bells on each foot, and their feet are so fast that they'll slap the pavement, the marble floor, with machine-like cracks as many as 6 or 8 times a second. And it's spectacular, it's fast moving, there's a lot of twirls. So that dance originated from Krishna dancing on the hoods of the Kaliya serpent. So Kaliya, in opposing Krishna, Kaliya was instrumental in proving the power of God and bringing a wonderful devotional art form into the world. And if you read the stories of Krishna's pastimes, you'll see that he rewards all of his enemies. Sisupal, Agasura, Putana, Duryodhana, Hiranyakashipu, for their role in assisting him in his mission, they all got liberation. I had a fellow that lived in the temple for some time, and he just hated me. He wanted my job. Didn't matter that I'd been here for 20 years. Didn't matter that I was a senior devotee. It served his interest to criticize and to see everything that I did is wrong. And one of his biggest so-called campaigns, which he would talk to everyone around my back and criticize me about, was that we had this beautiful temple. We had this beautiful temple up on the hill and a dirt road leading up to it. And winter after winter, after the ice and the expansion, the holes, the potholes got bigger and bigger. And every spring we'd go out with the asphalt and we'd make it smooth. But, you know, a couple of people trying to get up the hill and spinning their wheels was all it took to, you know, unveil the potholes again. So he just went on and on and on and on and on. And at that time, the quotes were $50,000-$60,000 to asphalt the parking lot. And he said, you have to do it, you have to do it. And he accused me of hoarding money for my retirement fund. And pretty soon I just said, well, you know, if it's going to make him happy for me to pave the road, we had the money. I said, if it's going to make him happy for me to pave the road, I'm not going to pave the road. Because why should I make him happy? He's making my life miserable. Why should I then reciprocate by making him happy? So I determined, I just put my heels in. I said, I'm not going to pave the road as long as he's here. Because I don't want to make him happy. It's just stubbornness. And he left, and then a couple years later, the downturn in the economy brought the price of paving the road from $50,000 and $60,000 down to $18,000. So if I ever see that man again, I'm going to kiss him. He has no idea how much money he saved us. So you never know. You never know who God's sending in your path. In the Bible, there's an instance where Paul, the one who wrote the whole New Testament, God speaks to him through a donkey. Now, I'm not calling this guy a donkey or anything. Don't misunderstand me. But God sends all kinds of people and oppositions and stumbling blocks to move us to a higher level of our destiny. Here is Duryodhana. You know, Krishna and the Pandavas, Antoine was asking before why it was that Krishna encouraged Arjuna to kill the Kauravas. And we have to say that Krishna and the Pandavas, did everything they could to avoid the war. They went into exile for 14 years, 13 years, like Ram went 14 years, they went 14. They accepted it without protest. Their wife was tried to be stolen. Their wife was tried to be kidnapped. They were poisoned. One time they were put into a house which was set on fire by their enemies. And they still went into it. And they lost their kingdom because of cheating on the part of Duryodhana and others. So they still went into the forest. They observed all the conditions. When they had been cheated of their kingdom, Duryodhana had said, when you come back, if you fulfill all the conditions of the exile, I will give you half the kingdom back. They fulfilled all the conditions of Exodus. They came back, and Duryodhana refused. He was adamant. He would not keep his word. In fact, not only was he not going to give them half the kingdom back, he said, I will not give them as much land as can fit under the head of a pin. And even Krishna went to plead for peace. The Supreme Personality of Godhead pleaded for peace. And Duryodhana was adamant. His heart would not melt. He would not budge. And because of that, the whole Kurukshetra war took place. 6.5 million soldiers assembled in what might have been the first world war. And Kunti, the mother of the Pandavas, went to Krishna and she said, Krishna, can you protect my sons during this maelstrom, during this world war? Krishna said, everyone else will die, but your five sons will survive. And sure enough, even though every single soldier on that battlefield was trying with all of his expertise, all of his weaponry, to kill the five Pandavas, every other soldier was killed and liberated, and the five Pandavas survived the battle. Although every effort for peace had been made. And because Duryodhana would not have any other option than all-out war, because he would not settle for anything other than the total extinction of the Pandavas, he was made extinct. All of his hundreds of thousands of expert soldiers were made extinct, and the Pandavas were brought through this unscathed. And it was because of the hard-heartedness of Duryodhana that Krishna was able to show his power. It was because of the hard-heartedness of Duryodhana that the conflict took place. And on the eve of that conflict, Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, which we would not have today were it not for the obstinacy of Duryodhana. Krishna promises, Sipram bhavati dharmatma sasvik chantim kaunteya pratijanahi name bhakti pranasati. In the 9th chapter, 31st verse of the Bhagavad Gita, he quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. So every enemy that comes into your life is there to promote you, to make you stronger, to develop your character, not to defeat you, but to make you better. Krishna celebrates his devotees, he celebrates his enemies as well. So stop asking, why did this happen to me? The better question is, what do I have to learn from this opposition? We're never going to understand God's unlimited, infinite wisdom. We're not going to be able to explain every bad thing that's happened to us. But we can tell you this, Krishna is still on the throne. He still created all the worlds, spiritual and material. He's still in control. And he does have a great plan for your life. What was meant for your harm, he wants to use to your advantage. So do your part. Do your part. Shake off your self-pity, blame of others, discouragement, disappointment. No enemy is powerful enough to keep you from your destiny. The Lord of the universe will not only bring you through trouble, but he'll bring you out better than you were before. Don't fight a closed door. God is directing your steps. Flow with it. You know, we all thank God for the open doors, the opportunities, the promotions, the new job, the new relationship. We all thank him for those. And we see so clearly how that's part of our destiny. But we need to learn now to thank him for the closed doors. Because wherever there's a closed door, it means that he has another door that's bigger and better for you. And it will open up. During their exile, there was a time when Arjuna went to the heavenly planets to visit his father Indra to get some celestial weapons from Indra that they would use in the coming battle against their enemies. So while he was in the heavenly planets, there was a damsel there, a society girl named Urvasi, who took a fancy to Arjuna and wanted to have an affair with him. Arjuna did a little research. Now, on the heavenly planets, our 6 months is there one day. So 6 months to us is there one day. Time is relative. And so the further out you go in the universe, the differences in time appear. The Sputnik in 1959 went around the world in like 2 hours. So Arjuna did a little research and he discovered that Urvasi was actually his great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother. And he said, you're beautiful, you're attractive, you know, I mean, any man would be out of his head to not accept your proposal, but I can't. I really can't, because you're my great, great, great. And that's what everyone wants to hear, right? You know, that's what everyone wants to hear. You remind me of my mother. See, I knew I would be able to say something about Mother's Day, somehow or other. you know. You remind me of my mother, you know. So she cursed him to become a eunuch. Now, if you're a macho military policeman warrior type guy, you know, always around with your chest puffed out, you know, and your footsteps, you know, shake the earth, you know, and then in a twinkling of an eye, in a word, in the clip of a finger, you go from this to this. And that's about the worst thing that could befall you, right? I mean, is there anything worse than that? I mean, most big macho guys, you know, they're like, they see red, you know, when there's any indication of, you know, not full-hearted, you know, macho man stuff. They have this exposition that's coming up. All things men, right? All things men. So Arjuna got cursed by Urvasi to be a eunuch for 1 year. And it worked out for his good. Because 12 years the Pandavas had to live in exile, and the 13th year they had to live incognito. They had to live in such a way that no one would recognize them. If anyone recognized them during the year, they would have to go into exile another 13 years. So how is the biggest, strongest, most powerful warrior in the world going to live incognito? He stands out wherever he goes like a sore thumb. But he was eunuch for that year. So he went inside where they were staying, the five Pandavas. They were staying in the palace of King Bharata. And Arjuna said, I can teach dance. I can teach dance. And the king said, good. And because he was a eunuch, the king said, you can live in the harem. We don't have anything to worry about from a eunuch. You can live in the harem, and no outsider could ever look in the harem under penalty of death. So you live in the harem and you teach all the young girls how to dance. So the curse worked to save his life and the life of his brothers. And not only that, during that time, he taught the king's beautiful daughter Uttara how to dance. And then when he got his manhood back at the end of the year, she wanted to marry him. And he said, I've been teaching you like a father, it's not proper, but why don't you marry my son Abhimanyu? And she became the mother of Parikshit Maharaj, who continued the Pandava dynasty. So we need to learn to thank God for closed doors as well as open doors. And the thing is, the key is, when we have a reverse, when we have a negative situation, stay in faith. Stay in faith. Don't get bitter. Don't get stuck in the past. Don't give in to resentment. Say, Krishna, I trust you. I'm in your hands. You know what's best for me. I may not understand this, but I believe you know what's best for me, and it's a part of your plan. Just let go and get a fresh vision, knowing that Krishna promises all things work for our goods. When you have faith like that, you're allowing God to do amazing things in your life. In the 1900s, the main crop in Alabama was cotton. That was the main cash crop. The whole state of Alabama supported itself by cotton and had done so for many, many decades before. But some or other, someone brought in the boll weevil from South America. And the boll weevil loved cotton plants. So it became a scourge. It became a plague. The boll weevils were eating the cotton plants. And the Alabama farmers had no more subsistence. They tried everything to get rid of the boll weevils. Pesticides, chemicals. They even invented their own brand of chemicals. Nothing would stop the boll weevils from eating the cotton. So it looked like they were doomed. They were sitting around one day, and one of the farmers said, why don't we try peanuts? And the rest of the farmers look at him like a cow looks at a new gate. Peanuts? You got to be kidding. But they had nothing to lose, so they planted peanuts. And lo and behold, the boll weevil hated the taste of peanuts, left them totally alone. And in 3 months, the first year they planted peanuts, that it was so successful that they made more money than they made in a normal year of planting cotton. And they actually never went back to cotton. From then on in, the main crop in Alabama was peanuts. So we're also, all of us, going to experience the boll weevils of life. And they're sent to show us the new things that God wants us to do. You may be dealing with some boll weevils at the office, some boll weevils at home. Stay in faith, peanuts are headed your way. Setback is really a setup. Boll weevil may look like it's there to destroy you, but God allowed it to come so that He could take you to a whole new level. The stumbling block becomes a stepping stone. In your life, Krishna has lined up certain enemies. God has personally chosen, He's hand-chosen enemies to come against you in your life. And although you may not understand at the time, eventually you'll look back and you'll see what God was doing. But we're asking you today, though you don't understand it and you don't like it, we're asking you to trust Him. Trust God to have your best interests at heart. If you'll shake off the negatives, you'll discover nothing in life happened to you. It happened for you. And I declare that you'll overcome every obstacle, you'll defeat every enemy, and you will accomplish every God-given dream. And if you're willing, with me, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.